WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Jada Lucas.
And I'm Jonah Chester. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, September 18th, 2017.
We're very concerned that the proposed logging are going to destroy the rugged, primitive character of the natural forest in the heart of the backcountry area.
WFHB correspondent Alex Davis spoke with Jeff Stant, executive director of the Indiana Forest Alliance, about the proposed state logging of Yellowwood State Forest. That story coming up in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Wendy Rubin volunteers with the Alzheimer's Resource Service Support Group, providing supports to participants and their family caregivers. That's coming up on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, these local headlines.
Habitat for Humanity of Monroe County has named Daryl Nair as its next chief executive officer. Nair worked as an instructor in business communications at the Kelly School of Business for the past two decades. He says he plans on finishing out this semester before beginning his work with Habitat for Humanity on January 1st. Nair is currently working with the Monroe County Habitat for Humanity in an advisory position, where he is learning how to work with the program.
I wanted to make sure that when I take over as CEO on January 1, I could really hit the ground and hit the ground running.
Nair was in the running for a former city council member at large, Tim Mayer's city council seat, earlier this month. But he says he has decided to drop out of the race after interviewing for the Habitat for Humanity CEO position.
If I would have gone through the city council process and you know, had I been fortunate enough to win in the caucus, I would have to step down because of this appointment. I didn't think that was fair to the Democratic Party. I didn't think it was fair to the precinct committee people who were going through it. I didn't think it was fair to the other candidates. And I certainly didn't think it was fair to the citizens of Bloomington.
Daryl Nair will replace former Habitat CEO Kerry Thompson, who left the organization in August 26 after 26 years.
Attorney General Curtis Hill has announced that Indiana has reached a settlement with pharmaceutical manufacturer Novo Nordisk. The agreement settles accusations that the company failed to comply with Food and Drug Administration standards for their type 2 diabetes medication. The FDA required the insulin manufacturer to work to lessen the risk of a form of cancer caused by the medication Victoza. In addition to the FDA required the company to divulge the potential risks to physicians in order the company failed to comply with, Novo Nordisk failure to divulge the appropriate information resulted in a $46.5 million settlement with the federal government and various states, including Indiana, affected by the misbranding. The federal government will receive $43 million and the state Medicaid programs will receive $3.3 million. Indiana Medicaid will receive over $150,000 in settlements.
Transportation services company Auxilio Services was delivered a public letter by the Monroe County Community School Corporation that their bus contract will be canceled due to parent complaints, delays, and a shortage of drivers. The letter, sent to Auxilio late last week, stated that the contract will be terminated on October 13th. The move by MCCSC officials comes after repeated outcry and complaints from parents and community members, including members of the Bloomington Solidarity Network. In mid-August, on the first day of school, many students were either late or not picked up at all. On August 14th, Auxilio was sent a warning that five terms of its agreement were not met, and that if they were not fixed within 30 days, the contract would be canceled. The delays, buses driving off their routes, missed pickups and drop-offs came as officials from Auxilio and MCCSC spokesman Andrew Clampett assured residents that the school year would begin smoothly. Parents and residents became concerned when, 1 week before MCCSC opened the 2016-2017 school year, Muncie Community Schools suffered extensive problems with their bus system, which was largely run by Auxilio. The cancellation of Auxilio's contract with MCCSC comes after a similar move by Muncie Community Schools.
The Lotus Education and Arts Foundation is working to fund a new public space, which will also serve as Lotus's permanent offices. The building, deeded to Lotus in 2015 by the city, is a decommissioned fire station on South Rogers Street. The foundation plans on using the space to host community gatherings, workshops, and after-school programs, according to Lotus Foundation's Megan Hutchinson.
A lot of kind of after-school, during-school programs, and then also as a concert venue. You know, we've always had to rely on these really big venues to have concerts, but now we have this space of our own.
In addition to partnering with larger donors, Lotus is raising money through crowdfunding. They have raised $10,000 of their $50,000 goal through the city, or through the site, patronicity.com.
We will continue to fundraise throughout the winter and early spring, and then the idea is to be able to open in time for our 25th anniversary, which will be September of next year.
Those interested in donating to the project can visit Lotus's website at lotusfest.org/donate. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jada Lucas.
And I'm Jonah Chester. 299 acres of Yellowwood State Forest are on the table for selective logging. As WFHB correspondent Alex Davis reports, environmental groups, scientists, and researchers are warning that dozens of endangered species roost in Yellowwood's backcountry. And they're bringing their pleas to stop the Indiana Department of Natural Resources to Governor Eric Holcomb.
Concerns are growing over Yellowwood State Forest logging. More environmental groups have spoken out about the proposed logging to take place in Yellowwood State Forest. Joint comments were filed by Heartwood and the Sierra Club Hoosier chapter that oppose the 300 acres that are to be logged. In a press release, Bodum Quinn, director of the Sierra Club's Hoosier chapter, stated ecological groups are working together to rapidly document Yellowwood's flora and fauna before the Department of Natural Resources Division of Forestry selectively fells trees. Bodum Quinn wrote, quote, "Led by the Indiana Forest Alliance, with the support from other groups, including the Sierra Club, this EcoBlitz has brought scientists from around the county to document the astoundingly rich biological diversity of this forest, including many endangered species," unquote. Bodum Quinn continued writing, quote, "By announcing its plans to log this area, the DNR is showing a blatant disregard for ecological and scientific integrity," unquote. Jeff Stant, executive director of Indiana Forest Alliance, says he's appalled by the DNR's proposal to selectively log some 299 acres of Yellowwood State Forest.
"Well, we're very concerned that the proposed logging are going to destroy the rugged, primitive character of the natural forest in the heart of the backcountry area that was established back in 1981 by Governor Orr to preserve that forest for wilderness recreation, expressly for that purpose, and that what they're doing now with these proposed cuts is going to just completely, irreparably degrade and destroy that wilderness character for six or seven more generations of Hoosiers."
Stant says his concerns come from a lack of specifics in the draft copy of the Forest Division's Resource Management Guide. The Indiana Forest Alignment's website states that there has been a 400% increase in logging in Indiana since 2002.
"It's violating the commitment that Governor Orr made to the people of the state of Indiana to preserve some of our state forests as wilderness areas for the enjoyment of all of us, not just to have all of it be an industrial tree farm. In fact, to manage a good portion of it for other purposes, since it's a public forest, and this particular area for wilderness recreation and the enjoyment of solitude and a natural forest environment. These plans are going to irreparably harm that."
Opponents of the logging say that the DNR hasn't released data on a specific number of trees that they plan on harvesting, and that no specifics have been released to indicate what or how wildlife will be affected by the logging.
"These are unlike previous cuts that have been done in the backcountry area that were way up at the northwest and southeast corners. These were smaller cuts that were out of public view. These cuts they're proposing now are right front and center in the heart of the backcountry area, and so everybody's going to notice them, and they're much larger cuts. They're going to move larger volumes of timber, and so for that reason, we're very concerned."
Stant is worried that the DNR is contradicting their stance on maintaining their commitment to keep Yellowwood as an old-growth forest. His concern is that the DNR promised that they would protect a certain percentage of old-growth forest in order to get their forestry certification from the Forest Stewardship Council.
"We want them to adhere to that commitment, not just contradict it, and not get the certification for logging sustainably and then turn around right away and then 4 months later violate that certification by violating the requirement 63A1 that states where old growth of different community types that would naturally occur on the forest are underrepresented relative to natural conditions, the Division of Forestry shall ensure that a portion of the forest is managed to enhance or restore old growth characteristics." That's, I'm quoting right from the audit.
Stant says scientists cored some of the older trees in Yellowwood's back county that are 150 to 238 years old. Stant says that the forest is on the cusp of turning back into an old-growth forest.
"The state is saying that across the state forest system, according to their own continuous forest inventory, there's less than 500 acres of forest that's older than 160 years across all of the state forest system. So why would they go into the largest area of older forest left that we can tell and say we're going to log the 300 acres in the heart of it? That's what they're proposing to do here. And in the process, they're violating the commitment they made in this audit to let it go back to being old growth.
Stant says threatened and endangered species may be affected by the logging of closed canopy habitats. This includes more than 100 lichen species, some of which were never previously found in the state.
One of the first lichen studies done in almost 40 years has just been done in this area, and they found more than 60 of the more than 100 lichens they found in the forest were first-time finds for the state of Indiana, never had been seen here before. And 40 of them were found in one of the tracts they're proposing to log.
The so-called Eco Blitz, with scientists and forestry experts gathering extensive information on Yellowwood's ecology prior to the state logging plans, was funded by the Smithsonian Institute.
They're not even looking at data and information that teams of scientists have put together who've been inventorying plant and animal life in this very forest area for the past 4 years. Through this, what's called an EcoBlitz survey of all life in this area, more than 4,000 species of plants and animals, fungi and lichens in this forest, and number of rare, threatened, and endangered species.
Stant stated that recently this summer an IU team of scientists went out to document this information. The DNR required the team to get 14 permits to obtain the data and did not look at the results found before making plans to log. Some of the animals found are endangered species.
There are six different bats that have been either netted or directly caught or have been tracked through acoustic monitoring in the EcoBlitz area, two through the acoustic monitoring and four through direct netting of the bats. And all of them are either on the National Endangered Species List or the state list, or both. Those are the Indiana bat, the northern long-eared bat, little brown bat, hoary bat, the eastern red bat, and the eastern pipistrel.
Stant says these bats are nesting or roosting in the state's forest, large or dead trees, and by the state's own account, they have documented a decline in the species of bats that require Indiana forest to breed.
There's two shrews called the smoky and pygmy shrew that were only discovered in Indiana in, I believe it's 1982, the first time they were even known to exist in the state. They were then, their ranges were mapped, and they're found to exist only in the deepest forests in the unglaciated south-central part of the state, where we have the deepest forests. The guy who's done the most mapping of their range, a guy named Dr. John Whitaker, he was the chair of the Non-Game Mammals Technical Advisory Committee to the DNR for 25 years.
Dr. John Whitaker researches the ecology of small mammals and their parasites. He currently works in the Department of Ecology and Organismal Biology at Indiana State University. Stant says Dr. Whitaker wrote to the DNR asking them not to log these habitats as it would endanger six different types of shrews found in Yellowwood.
This man has written the state a letter pleading with them not to log this forest because he's inventoried this very forest, found both of these shrews and two other kinds of shrews and the woodland vole all in this forest. And they all live in these large down logs. They usually live under them or right along the side of them. And we've found all of these shrew species.
Other animals include 13 different salamanders and the state endangered timber rattlesnake's dens, which are located in the trees to be logged. Birds such as the warblers only breed in the lower deep forest of the state. As well as the species of special concern such as the worm-eating warblers, there are over a dozen other bird species that the team found in Yellowwood, along with over 123 species of spiders, 23 of which were found for the first time in Indiana. Stant says logging Yellowwood State Forest could cause other species to take over and kill off already endangered plants and animals.
When you open big patches in the forest, these open country birds that lay their eggs in the nests of other birds come in. They're afraid of the deep forest, but they'll come into forest areas where there are openings that are larger than the trees are high. And that's what logging does to these forests. It opens them up like Swiss cheese. And these birds come in and they lay their eggs in the nests of these small deep forest dependent songbirds.
That could push birds such as the warblers to extinction. There are 21 species of animals formerly listed as endangered that are known to exist in the tract of Yellowwood State Forest set to be logged.
There's a plant community there, a botanist, and these are the top botanists in the state of Indiana, have assessed and given it scores. They're called floristic quality assessments that rate it as one of the highest, most undisturbed quality tracts of hardwood forest left in Indiana, higher than most nature preserves.
Stant wants people to contact Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb's office, as he has the power to cancel the DNR's logging plans.
There's no obligation that they do this logging by law or regulation. They've just decided they want to do it. And the governor, as the chief executive of the state that the DNR reports to, has the authority to cancel these logging plans or to tell them not to move forward with them or to take more input. He can do any of those things, but he needs to hear from people who are concerned about our forests and about how little old-growth forests we have in Indiana today if he's going to make that decision.
Stant says the DNR logging would close Yellow Woods' two most popular trails, the Tecumseh and the Possum Trot Trails, for 3 years. For WFHB, I'm Alex Davis.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support also comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring tales of inspiration from local citizens who stand up for what they believe in and encouraging you to find your cause, live your passion, make a difference. Volunteer.
I'm Wendy Rubin, and I'm affiliated with the Bloomington Hospital Alzheimer's Resource Service. My husband had Alzheimer's, and he passed in 2013. He was diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment in 2006. 2009, the official diagnosis came after a more extensive neuropsych test, and I cared for him at home until 2013, and he passed September 20th. Well, that was the first year I did the Alzheimer's walk. It was 5 days before he passed, but my involvement started because I started going to Dana Thompson's caregiver support group, and it was the most wonderful experience because you're with a group of people who are walking that journey with you. They understand. And they've experienced everything you have. They are like a giant hub, a shoulder to cry on, support when you need it. And Dana has an extraordinary ability to let people talk among themselves and answer questions if they arise. But it's really kind of a self-motivating group. When Dick passed away, I decided that I wanted to continue going, not because I needed the support of the group, but I thought that I could help others. To this day, which is 4 years later, I'm still going. I started getting involved with the Alzheimer's Walk after that first year. I was invited to be on the committee, and I was invited to be keynote speaker. Then I was asked to be co-chair, and I'm co-chair again this year. So this is actually my fifth walk, and it's a very celebratory event. People and their families, all the way from babies all the way to geriatric, and people who are living with Alzheimer's and dementia as well. And this year, there's a flower that symbolizes you're living with someone with Alzheimer's, one that you're a volunteer, one that you've lost a loved one, one that you're just there. And the fifth flower this year is a white flower, which is going to signify a survivor of the disease, which means that what we're doing is raising money to fund research to find a cure. And this white flower is going to symbolize that cure. So that's very exciting. You know, there's kind of no end to the little that we give and how much we get back from seeing changes, you know, to eliminate stigma, to give people a broader understanding of what Alzheimer's and dementia is and what living with it is and what caring for it is. It is true, I never anticipated how I was going to feel after my husband passed away. We were married almost 45 years. He had been a faculty member at Indiana University. He did everything right. We were vegetarian for 30 years. He was a marathon runner. He used his brain, obviously, and yet he was one of the afflicted. And when he passed, I felt suddenly this passion to be involved with what claimed his life and hope that I can help others better their situation as they're living with the disease. And it's helped me to understand even more. I'm Wendy Rubin, and I'm affiliated with the Bloomington Hospital Alzheimer's Resource Service.
You may visit the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network website to see a full organization profile at bloomington.in.gov/volunteer. Now here's a rundown of current volunteer opportunities in Bloomington and Monroe County.
For the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake with three featured volunteer opportunities for the week. All Options Pregnancy Resource Center is seeking talkline advocates to provide and promote judgment-free support for people in all of their decisions, feelings, and experiences with pregnancy, parenting, abortion, and adoption. Or fill the role of inventory inspector at Salvation Army to assist staff as they receive, sort, hang, and tag the hundreds of pounds of donated items daily. Funds raised in the resale store are used to support their programs and food pantry. And finally, share your gift for strategy as a communications team co-chair for the Community Orchard. Facilitate monthly meetings, manage promotional projects, and identify new opportunities to get the word out. And that's a look at just some of the ways you can connect to your community through volunteering. For WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to build an empowered, vibrant, and engaged community. You may visit bloomington.in.gov/volunteer to find and sign up for local volunteer opportunities. All episodes of Activate are available online at wfhb.org/news/activate. For Bloomington Community Radio, I'm Jennifer Brooks.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Jonah Chester and Alex Davis, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Alex Davis.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Michael Glab. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Jada Lucas. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast as well as other WFHB news programming online at wfhb.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@wfhb.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Kite Line, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.